seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk local and national. Today we're going to break it up. High school basketball and some Major League Baseball. Spring training is here. Pitchers and catchers last week. Today, we'll talk about some of the big storylines in Major League Baseball. How about some of the down teams? If you're a Chicago Cub fan, I know we got quite a few in the area. How excited are you for the season? I'd be really interested to see how the Cubs approach this year once we hit the midway point, if they're not in contention. Got some big-name free agents. Already moved on from you, Darvish. John Lester's time is now finished in Chicago. So I am curious. That's one of the teams that really have me intrigued going into this season. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a bit. Big game tonight right here on KOAL, the Lakers and the Jazz. You know what the Jazz don't care about? The Jazz do not care that the Lakers are down Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder. Two starters. They don't care about that. They haven't cared about that all season long. Curious to see how Utah comes out tonight, knowing that this game is at Vivint. The Lakers have struggled as of late. And, you know, there are teams in the league that are built for June. The Lakers are one of them. Why? Because they have an aging star in LeBron James. That's why. The Clippers, I think the Clippers are a team that need to show something in the regular season. I think the Jazz are a team that need to show something in the regular season. You go to the East, same thing with Philly. When I look at Brooklyn, now they have two champions on their team, be it Kyrie Irving or Kevin Durant. That's not a team that has to show me anything in the regular season, even with the addition of James Harden. The Jazz are showing it. The Clippers have at times. Clippers also have a new coach, some new faces, a lot of depth. But tonight, I think it's one of those games where Utah wins, and I think when the Jazz win this game tonight, Jazz fans who are just so excited right now to begin with on Twitter. Jazz Twitter is in a new realm right now. It's in a different world. You get a victory tonight. Jazz Twitter is going to lose it regardless if AD and Schroeder are playing because, like I said, they don't care. We'll talk NBA basketball. That's coming up in just a bit. Let's move over to golf, and it was a little startling yesterday when we found out that Tiger Woods was in a car accident and had sustained injuries that were moderate to critical. I believe that's what the initial term was. Now more and more is coming out of it. Tiger is going to survive. The Los Angeles County Sheriff said today that Tiger Woods was not drunk during the rollover that seriously injured him. He said it was purely an accident. It was also reported today that there would be no charges filed against Tiger Woods pertaining to the crash. As part of a statement on Tiger Woods' official Twitter account, they said that there were multiple open fractures to his lower right leg, and they had to place a rod in his tibia, and screws and pins have been inserted into his foot and ankle during emergency surgery. Tiger was awake, responsive. Now he's recovering in the hospital, according to another part of the statement. Just a very scary moment. Tiger Woods, one of the greatest athletes of all time. Now, we've talked about Tiger. We've had plenty of segments on Tiger Woods here on the show. Golf is always better when Tiger is involved. I think that's very simple. Sounds like he is going to make a full recovery. There were no skid marks and no evidence of braking, and weather wasn't a factor either as far as the crash. Authorities, however, did not say how fast he was driving. However, Tiger was wearing a seatbelt and that's probably why he is still with us. We take a look at the NBA schedule tonight, and again, we mentioned the Lakers and the Jazz. It's right here on KOAL, full slate of games, and we'll get into those in just a bit. I want to break, bring in the local sports segment. Coach Lynn Tuttle is going to join us. Then we'll talk baseball. We'll wrap up with NBA talk. That's what we have on tap on this edition of Drive Time Sports. We're off and rolling right after this.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Coming up tomorrow, it's Emory High School basketball making its return right here to KOAL. The Lady Spartans will take the court against the Delta Rabbits. It's a later tip-off. In comparison to some of the other games that we'll get throughout the day, the Lady Spartans will take the court at 7 o'clock tomorrow. We're going to talk about that matchup and more right now with our next guest, Coach Lynn Tuttle, over the phone. Coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Jordan.
Well, Coach, you and I talked following Saturday's win over Providence Hall, and I think we both expected that Delta would be the team that would be waiting for the Lady Spartans once the quarterfinals hit, and true to form, that's exactly what it is. So the RPI, no upsets in the opening round. We get seeds 1 through 8, and now we're down to the final 3 days of the season.
Yeah, we are. Delta, we figured it'd be Delta. I know Delta and Union have split during the season, but I felt like Delta was just a little better team. They had won that region. I thought they'd show up and take care of business because it was at their place. And a little bit of a scare for them. Union made a late run, but Delta ended up, taking it in the end. And so that happened Saturday. That allowed us a couple days to prepare for them. And really, I think we match up well with them. We've kind of prepared, and we're ready to go down tomorrow night and see what happens.
Yeah, Coach, as far as the girls' performance on Saturday, and you and I did talk about this, I know, post-game, but I'm sure maybe perspective has changed a little bit if you've had time to go back and look at it. You and I talked about a second quarter that was a little bit of a downer. Maybe that was if you had to be picky and pinpoint something, maybe that was it. But now that you had some time to go back and look, did your assessment at all change of that game?
Not necessarily. We showed up and played. The toughest part, in my mind, is if you're playing a team that's not so great, they're down a little bit. The toughest part, I think, is showing up and not playing down to that level. Playing up to the capabilities we're able to do. So we started the game great. The second quarter, we just offensively went in a slump. Just kind of got away from what we do. We weren't moving the ball well, and I don't know if the girls got a little bit complacent because we'd had a big first quarter and basically won it in the first. Defensively, I don't know. We let them score 2 or 4 points is all. So if I had to nitpick something, it was kind of letting down in the second. We went in halftime and discussed that and tried to make some adjustments, and they come out in the third and took off how they were able to and done very well. So all in all, looking back on that game, like you had mentioned, the second quarter was kind of a crippling quarter for us, and it wasn't encouraging at this point of the season. I mean, leading into our champion, our try for a championship run this Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But the third quarter, they bounced back, kind of erased what they'd done in the second.
Coach, also in this game, you guys made it very difficult defensively for Providence Hall, and I'm assuming now over the course of the next 3 days, you got to score the basketball, but defense becomes a factor. It's one of the things I've learned, especially over the course of 3 days. Typically, the teams that have the best legs come out on top. That's probably a fair assessment, wouldn't you say?
I believe so. Defense, it should never struggle. You should show up ready to go, and it don't matter, whether you win by 60 to 50 or 40 to 30. You just got to come out on top, and defensively, I always say defense wins championships. So that's kind of been a strength of this team over the season. And I'm we practiced it, we prepared, and hopefully we can continue to play defensively strong.
Offensively in this game, Coach, we can talk about some of the other pieces. I know that throughout the year there's been girls that have stepped up at key times. It almost seems like you know what you're going to get out of Tambry. We know what we're going to get out of Tatum. But it's been the girls like Daisy and Addie and these girls that have managed to step up at key times in the game that has kind of propelled this team. And I think you made a reference to it off of the air. You said, you know, if you have two really good players and a couple of role players to put around those good players, some good things can happen. And really, when you look at the landscape of this team over the course of the season, that's what you guys have had.
Yeah, it is. Going into probably every contest we have, we know the opposing team's preparing for our strength. They're going to pack it in on Tatum now. She's starting to come around. They're obviously going to shade Tambry wherever she goes. Bailey Jacobson, you know, she's a girl that she couldn't get things going early. As of late, she started to come on a little bit and playing. She's probably still not playing up to her capabilities. But we expect going into any contest, they've prepared and going to try to take away our strength. Therefore, we've got, you know, three or four other girls that can step up. I say when we played Carbon, Daisy probably, kind of spurted that run for us and probably got us back in the game to where we could overcome and everybody get going. And then Bailey, she's had a few good games when others have struggled. Addie, she's capable of stepping up if they're concentrating on other girls. So, yeah, I always mention if you're one-dimensional, you're pretty easy to stop. If you've got several different weapons and threats, if they take one strength away, we'll move to our next one.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Lynn Tuttle of the Emory Lady Spartans. Coach, let's jump ahead. We'll talk about the game against Delta. When you talk about weapons, there's one girl on this team in particular that can score the ball effectively, and that's JD Dunston. Outside of that, it's really balanced. So what you have is one girl that can average 15, 16, 17 a game, and you got a bunch of girls that can average 5 and 6. So when you look at Delta, does that stand out to you on what they present offensively?
It does. Looking at all the game film and stuff, you've described them perfectly. They've got the Dunston girl. They try to run a bunch through her. She's a great shooter from outside. She can penetrate. She can kind of do everything. So, I mean, I think we've kind of prepared. We will probably put, I'm going to have to say Bailey on her. Bailey's going to be quicker, more athletic, not quite as big, but they don't, with the Dunston girl, they don't utilize her in the paint stuff. It's everything outside the perimeter and driving. So our main focus tomorrow night with Delta is shut Dunston down. And I think Bailey will do a great job at that. They got some bigs. They got a Davis. The two big girls work great together. The Christensen will catch the ball, and she don't look to score, but she's a great passer to the other big, and she can score with her back against the basket in any situation. So we're going to try to utilize that. And then Addie, I mean, our defense starts up top with Addie. She's going to hopefully smother Nielsen and just not let him get in a rhythm or even get any easy looks to start their offensive sequence.
Again, you have the athletes, especially, Coach. So with this specific style of team that you go toe-to-toe with, do you feel comfortable going to a man?
I do, yep. Yeah. We'll man them up. I think we're probably better in every position. We'll keep Tatum in the paint. When they start switching high post to the low, Tatum will just stay down on the block, and Tambry will always take the high post. So that's the switching we'll do. But defensively, I think we match up great with them.
Now, Coach, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself, but I got to ask the question. In the bottom half of the bracket, knowing it's either Grantsville or Judge Memorial, if you get past Delta, opposed to the top where it's South Sevier, Morgan, Carbon, and Richfield, as you and I alluded to, talked about last week, you like the fact that you're in this bracket avoiding Region 12, but have you paid attention to Grantsville or Judge Memorial at all? I know there's history with both of these teams, especially this season, but is that something you focused on at all?
Yeah, it is all season. I watch film regardless of not even knowing the situation or how things are going to unfold in the end, but I watch them. We actually played Judge this year earlier on their home court up there. That was one of our losses. We did not play well. We didn't focus our efforts where we needed to on Sidbury especially. But we've looked forward to, I say the toughest one when you go down to the state tournament is the first game. You got to get that first game. Can't overlook it, and that's usually the toughest one to get. But if we're fortunate and we can get by that one, we've looked at both Judge and Grantsville. Judge, we've put in a defense that if they get by and we match them, we're going to try a little different defensive scheme. And if it's Grantsville the following night, it's another team that we kind of match up with good. They've got a great big girl, absolutely great, phenomenal post player in Mason White. And then they've got a Backus girl that's a guard, and she's extremely great. So kind of that's our strength also. So we match up well with Grantsville if we've got them the following night. But we have looked forward to that, just hoping we can get past tomorrow night first.
Well, Coach, final day of practice, how do you handle that? What do you do today to make sure that, A, the girls are mentally ready and physically ready?
So I think they're mentally ready. We've had conversations these last 2 days leading up to it. I think today, definitely, we've got to save some legs. We've got a three-game stretch if we want to obtain our final goal, and we've got to save some energy for that. So today's getting in the gym. You know, the last couple of days, we've kind of found our shot again, a lot of shooting, drills, and shooting. So today's kind of the same thing. Save energy and get a lot of shots up and just get comfortable with shooting and, like you say, just some pep talk this afternoon.
Definitely looking forward to it, Coach. This is what you play for, right? I mean, we go back to our conversations in November when we didn't know if we were even going to have a season and the girls hadn't played basketball in a couple of weeks to be in this spot right here. I'm sure you couldn't have envisioned it any better.
No, we feel fortunate to be in this position. The girls have positioned themselves. You know, they've got an honest shot at it, and they know it. So, yeah, we're fortunate to have the year be where we're at, and we're looking forward to the next 3-4 days.
Coach, thank you so much for the time. We'll see you at the game tomorrow.
Okay, hey, thanks. Appreciate it, Jordan.
Again, Coach Len Zettel of the Emory Lady Spartans. Do not forget, tomorrow night, Emory's going to take the court right here. Live coverage is going to begin at 7 o'clock. Tip-off will follow at 7:30. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll move and talk baseball. Spring training, it's here. We talked pitchers and catchers last week with Bill Lasky. We'll talk everything else when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone!
Now a 3-1 for Acuna. Swinging a high fly ball! Deep to left field! Way, way back! It's gone!
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
It's spring training time for Major League Baseball. Fun time of the year. Last week, we managed to talk pitchers and catchers. Now we can talk everything as things start to pick up as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. Joining us right now to have that conversation again this week, we have Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, and now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. We'll talk about his work as well. Bill, always a pleasure. I look forward to these conversations each week.
Yeah, it's a great time. You and I love the game of baseball, and baseball is upon us. And spring training games are going to start ramping up already, even though the all-day players, everyday players came in Monday. They're starting their first games on Sunday. And what's kind of strange to me a little bit, but it's more of a precautionary thing, is some of these spring trainings are going to start out only being 7 innings, as well as if you want to put a defensive replacement. You can throw them into the game any type of the inning. You can bring pitchers in anytime you want. And just different facets of the game that they're trying to use in spring training to more or less, like I said, precautionary things for players because it is early.
Are you okay with that? I mean, you're a baseball purist. I'm a traditionalist myself. I don't like all the changes to the game itself. But as far as spring training is concerned, are you all right with the 7-inning game?
No, I'm not, because you got enough pitchers, you have enough players. You know, I always thought that was the key to some of the young players because they got into those games in the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, and they're sitting, you know, a lot of these guys are first time in the big leagues, first time in big league spring training. They want to get in and take one at bat. They want to get an inning in. Pitchers want to throw to a big league hitter. And, you know, you see all these numbers, 81, 86, 93, 94. Those are the guys that need those innings. Those are the guys that need those at-bats. And those are the guys that need to show their talents in front of the big league manager. So in the beginning, maybe the first week, maybe first couple games, but they're talking all the way through mid-March. And that's the question that I look at.
Well, Bill, let's talk about the upcoming season and some more of the offseason moves. Last week, we really focused heavily on the pitchers. This week, we can look at some of the positional players and some of the big money that was thrown out. Look, right out of the gate, Fernando Tatis Jr., this guy's in the National League West. You follow him. I've followed his entire career up to this point in time. The kid's special. He hasn't put together 162 games yet, but still the Padres come out, they throw 340 at him. In your mind, was that the right thing for the Padres to do?
I think with Machado signed, and I think what the Padres are doing is saying, hey, we're looking to contend against the Dodgers. And the guy that they wanted to be their superstar in that team is Tatis Jr. Now, no doubt about it, you and I both have seen his talents, but I think you hit it on the head. He hasn't played 162-game season. Is he going to melt down toward the end of the year? Great year last year, 60-game season, but they must see a lot of talent in him, and as well as we do, fans see it. In his press conference, the only thing I kind of just shook my head on, he was saying, I'm playing here to get a statue, some kind of a statue contract, and I thought that was very preliminary in, you know, looking at your career so far. And he was talking to Tony Gwynn Jr., and he said, I want to have a statue right next to your dad's. But you know what? You got a lot of baseball to play in your career before you even think about that. But if that's their goal, if that's their mindset, if that's what lights that fire, then I guess that's the new thing that we have to look at in the world of baseball.
Okay, going back to your days when you were a pitcher, if you would have had an infielder come out and say something, or even an outfielder come out and say something along the lines of, I want a statue next to Babe Ruth, or I want a statue next to Hank Aaron, would you throw at that guy?
I don't know about throwing at him, but I definitely would be squawking if I struck him out, or, you know, like a Bauer move, you know, statue, you can't even get a hit, you know.
And yeah.
He's got a lot of pressure on him now by mounting that attack, because you know that opposition, just like you and I are talking, that opposition is going to be chirping at him all the time. And, you know, there was a lot of comments all over baseball when he said that. And, you know, and then the new thing about the statue contract, is that what everybody's looking to have? I don't know. I played the game differently. The olden days, you played the game differently. And just like you said, if a Bob Gibson heard that, or somebody that threw extremely hard, you better be watching that chin music. And you still might get it from some of the Dodger hit pitchers or some of the Giant pitchers, you know, because, hey, pitchers look at that and say, really? You really think you're that exceptional? You have a lot of talent, no doubt. You're set for life, no doubt. But now you got to prove to me what you can do on that field consistently. Every year has to be an all-star year to really mount that attack to have that statue.
Well, Bill, this is a question for you, because I get to see things. You know, we're around AAA baseball, but you're around the show. And in my mind, from what I've noticed from the outside looking in, Major League Baseball is still different than, say, the NBA. The NBA has kind of gone to this fraternity era. It's been that way now for 4 or 5 years. I don't view baseball as that way. I still view that baseball has legitimate rivalries where players don't like one another.
It is, and it is a rivalry. That's what makes it the rivalry. I think, you know, probably a couple times before, you and I talked about this Dodger-Giant rivalry, and I grew up in Ohio. I didn't really know a lot about it because I really didn't follow California teams because of the Midwest and the West Coast. All I got to do is look at box scores because it was 3-hour difference. So when I came out here, and then everybody's telling me, oh, the Dodger-Giant rivalry, and I'm just like, what is that all about? And then the first game at Candlestick, I'm seeing fights in the stands, beer thrown at each other, you know, lighting, those little banners up. I mean, there was brawls all over the place, and it turned into that high school rivalry you always had against the other side of the town. But, you know, it was different back then. The rivalries now, I don't think they're at that level, because I think a lot of the players are looking longevity, looking for the big money, and they don't really, really worry about it. But I tell you what, the NL West is starting to have some rivalries. Of course, the Giants and the Dodgers. But I think that Padre-Dodger rivalry is going to start kicking in, because you got some outstanding talent on both those teams. And I just wonder how deep it's going to get with Bauer over there and all the chirping he's going to do. And then you got the Padres with a loaded team and a loaded pitching staff. And we keep forgetting about that pitching staff. They got a couple Cy Young winners over there now. So it's going to be a battle. But again, I don't think the rivalries are like back in the day when the Cardinals and the Cubs would fight, or the Yankees and the Red Sox would go at it. It's a different era of baseball.
Again, our guest right now is Bill Lasky, joining us right now to talk Major League Baseball. You just mentioned the Chicago Cubs. This is a team I want to talk about, Bill, because I don't know that there is a more interesting team going into the season than the Chicago Cubs. And people would look at me and say, "But really? The Cubs?" No, let me tell you why. When you look at what the Cubs did this last offseason, if they still feel they have a chance to win, there's no more Theo Epstein in that front office. They go out, they sign Jake Arrieta. They have Zach Davies. John Lester's gone. Like, this team looks different as far as the pitching rotation is concerned. But then you start looking at the position players. They still have Chris Bryant. They still have Baez. They still have Rizzo. They're heading for free agency in 2022. That's why this Cubs team is so interesting to me. Changes in the front office, three big-name players heading into free agency, and really a roster that just it can't compete. Let's just be honest. This team cannot compete in the National League. This is a fun season, I think. If you're not a Cubs fan, if you can watch from the distance, it's fun to see what happens here.
They sure did change. Hugh Darvish they got rid of, and then they pick up Jock Peterson.
Right, they got, yeah, correct, yeah.
And you look at some of the ads and some traction, is, you know, Bryant's name's been in every trade from the New York Mets to Washington Nationals, all over the place. And again, like you said, a new general manager, a new type of thoughts. Will there be trading during the year with this team if they don't come out of the blocks as any kind of contender? Possibly. It's just a different era of Cubs baseball, and I'm with you. I don't think they're going to contend against the Cardinals.
I don't think they can contend against the Cardinals. Then you look at the National League in general. I don't put them in the same stratosphere as the Braves or the Padres or the Dodgers or the Mets. There's just the NL is so loaded. And without the expanded playoffs, that changes things drastically.
I agree with you. I think the National League did a lot of moves over the winter, over the break. And I think the National League made themselves stronger. American League really didn't do much. You know, when you look at the Yankees, they really didn't do much. They picked up a couple players here and there. The Red Sox are on a tailspin. Jackie Bradley Jr. still out there as a free agent. What's going to happen to him? Why wasn't he signed? There's a lot of questions in the AL, and then you start looking at the AL West. The Oakland A's, I thought they were out of it. They got Rosenthal, Romo, Petit. They build their pitching staff right back up. They get rid of Simeon. You know, he goes to, where would he go? Minnesota, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you got different moves in the AL West. The Houston Astros really didn't do much. So I just think the National League really built their rosters stronger, and I think the NL is a better league this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and you look at the top free agents, the top free agents from this past offseason, we'll start off with JT Realmuto has got to be one of them, right? He signs in Philly.
Yeah.
You can talk about Trevor Bauer. He signs with the Dodgers. George Springer went to Toronto. DJ LeMahieu stays put in New York. But Marcell Ozuna stays with Atlanta. Marcus Stroman. So you look at all the biggest free agents, for the most part, they either stayed or went to the NL.
Yeah. Yeah, Simeon went to Toronto.
Toronto, correct.
I said Twins. He's in Toronto. And you look at the Blue Jays. Probably the Blue Jays did the most, and they said they were going to spend money, and they did.
Yeah, they went out and got Springer as well, so they added a couple of pieces, no doubt.
Yeah, but again, you know, what else is out there in American leagues? It's the same teams. Houston, I thought, would do something. Verlander's out for the year with Tommy John. They really didn't solidify any new players, any new bodies to build that team. So I do look at, and you know, just like what we just said, the National League definitely made some stronger moves, some stronger rosters, and really didn't, the Padres really didn't hurt their prospects. They didn't even touch the top 10 prospects in all the trades and moves they made. So I just think the National League is definitely better farm directors now. They're building their minor leagues better. And we'll just see if anything happens during the year. There's always a lot of moves and a lot of trades going on. And I think everybody's looking through spring training to get through it and see how COVID-19's doing. They're going to let fans in Florida and Arizona. So there will be baseball back with some fans, which is good. And we'll just see day to day, week to week, how spring training opens and how many guys get injured, how many times they push some of these guys. And I think that's the biggest issue right now because, like I said, active players came in Monday and all of a sudden they're in games by Sunday. And usually they take a week to 10 days or a little bit more than that. So we'll see how many guys play, if they play one inning, a couple at bats, things like that, and then move forward with that.
Bill, one more question for you before I let you go. Albert Pujols, we don't know if this is going to be his final season or not. There was a report that it would be, and then it turned out that wasn't an official report. His wife was talking hypothetically. But he's got a 10-year deal that expires, and when he signed that 10-year deal with the Angels, it was monumental news. The world of sports at that particular time, it was crazy, because you had LeBron James leaving Cleveland and signing with Miami in the decision, and then not long after that, Albert Pujols signed what was the richest contract in baseball history to go to the Angels, and they had spent a ton of money. Didn't work out, but when you go back and you look at the course of Albert Pujols' career, if it is in fact his last season, where do you place him? What's your thoughts on him and his career?
Well, you know, I looked at some of his numbers, and I was looking at this the other day because I was on a conversation about it. He's got 679 home runs. It's fifth place, 17 shy Alex Rodriguez. You start looking at RBIs, 2,164, 50 shy of Babe Ruth, third place. And then you just start looking at hits. 3,338. He's up five spots, passing Paul Molitor, Carl Yastrzemski. Again, it's good numbers, but when you look at all this, I'm in the same boat with you. Were they meaningful? Were they big hits? Were they big home runs? I always considered him a St. Louis Cardinal. I don't really know what he did with the Angels. He really didn't stand out down there. And everybody keeps saying he's a first-time ballot Hall of Famer. I just don't know. The numbers are there. But it just didn't jump at me. Those numbers are great numbers. Don't get me wrong. He's had a great career. But he just isn't that same guy that I remember with the Cardinals that was that guy up with bases loaded or first and second and he drives a ball in the gap, you know, or hits that sac fly home run or sac fly RBI to win a game. What do you think? Do you think I'm on the right page?
Yeah, I do. And my thought on Albert Pujols is, he's one of the greatest hitters of this generation when we combine power and consistency at the plate. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When you go back and you look at what he accomplished with the Cardinals, it was extraordinary. Now, he made a bad business move, maybe not financially, but career-wise, it was not the right move to go to the Angels. That organization has been in shambles for quite some time now. It was not the right move. You tag him next to Mike Trout, and you just think we're going to see... we have these high expectations, and they were expectations that were never met. And so then you look at his numbers with the Angels. He batted 257, 217 home runs, and I think 770 RBIs. I can't remember off the top of my head. Something along the lines of that. That drops his career average to 299. So think about that. The guy bats 257 with the Angels, and it drops his career average to 299. That's how spectacular he was in St. Louis. It just didn't work, Bill, with the Angels.
I agree. And just like I said, I remember him as a Cardinal. He was a fierce hitter there. And then he just kind of got soft with the Angels and a lot of injuries. Wasn't playing every day. DHing now. And I laughed the same thing you did. His wife precluded to put it on Twitter that he was retired. And the next thing he said is, my wife, you know, she said that. I didn't really mean that, you know. So he doesn't, who knows what it is, you know. And I guess the Albert Pujols household right now is in a little dismay. The wife maybe wants him to retire. Maybe she threw that out there. But at the same time, you know, this could be his last year. He's up in age. The Angels, like you said, have always been in a disarray down there. They just haven't had any kind of consistency in any year. And we're watching Mike Trout, one of the best players in the game, and he can't even get to the playoffs. So it is a question mark. We'll see as the year goes on, see if he's healthy, see what he can do. But I tell you what, I think just like what you said, when he went to the Angels, he went off the front page.
Yeah,
and once you're off the front page, the numbers are still there at the end of the years. And like you said, at the end of his career, his numbers will be there. But boy, oh boy, it went south ever since he put that Angel uniform on.
Bill Lasky, again, former big league pitcher, taking out the time to join us. Bill, as always, you got to let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
Yeah, doing some KNBR radio out here. KNBR is a sports leader. They cover the Giants. We're starting off spring training games this week, Sunday. 10 a.m. is the pregame show, and then right after I do a postgame show. So back on radio full-time on Saturdays and Sundays. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing some Giants games and talking about San Francisco Giants and the NL West like I always do. But again, baseball's back. I'm excited to get back into it, watch baseball, listen to the games, and get excited again. And, you know, it's 75 degrees here in San Francisco, and boy, oh boy, if that doesn't get you baseball ready, I don't know what will.
Yeah, it's go time. It's go time. Best time of the year. Bill Lasky, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Bill, thank you again for the time.
Thank you, and thank your listeners for listening. And it's always a pleasure talking to you week to week. I'll look forward to next week.
As do I, Bill. Looking forward to next week. Thank you. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back and wrap up with some NBA talk right after this.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game. Harris, pick and roll. Favors takes a strong and one. Oh, my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Coming up tonight, Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Lakers. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the live play-by-play call. We'll get you to Vivint Smart Home Arena at 7:50. Bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this edition of the show. This is a big game for people in Utah. Jazz fans don't like the Lakers. And while tonight is not a preview of what we're going to see, and I voiced this with one of our NBA guys, Tom Perkins, last week. He wanted to talk about a Laker-Nets championship preview. We haven't seen that yet because there's no AD, there's no Dennis Schroeder. It's so hard to say we have a potential championship matchup in any regard, be it the Western Conference or the NBA championship, because it's just been a very weird first half of the season. I don't think the second half is going to be like that. But still, Travis, the Jazz have taken advantage of it, and I believe the Jazz will come out tonight, and I think they will beat the Lakers fairly handedly. I do.
Yeah, Utah's going to smack the Lakers around tonight. It's not going to be close. The way the Lakers have been playing lately, you can see that they're missing a guy who can handle the ball. When Schroeder's out, nobody on that team can handle the ball but LeBron, and that's a problem. So LeBron's got to rely heavily on scoring. No, you know, nobody else really picked up the pace for the Lakers on the scoring end. Montrezl Harrell has done a good job, but yeah, Utah tonight will smack them around.
And no Anthony Davis. And I think in comparison, AD is as important to the Lakers as Rudy Gobert is to the Jazz. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, you take Gobert out of that factor with the Jazz, and they're not a very good basketball team.
Defensively, no, because Rudy Gobert adjusts everything inside the paint. I would expect Rudy to be able to handle Harrell or even Gasol down low. If they can bring him out, maybe it's a different game, but I think it's going to be tough sledding for the Lakers tonight. Travis, today the second half of the schedule was released for the Utah Jazz, and I was really curious on everyone's second half schedule, just because I think this is when things really start picking up, when we hit mid-March. Teams will then start priming for a championship or a playoff run, right? I don't know that the schedule gods were very kind to the Jazz on the second half schedule, and I'm curious to see how Utah responds to this once we get into the month of March. Not to overlook what's left in the first half of the season, but with the All-Star break looming, let's look at some tough stretches for Utah. March 14th through March 22nd. At Golden State, at Boston, at Washington, at Toronto, at Chicago. It's five straight road games. It's not an easy trek.
It's not easy. Even late in the season like that, you kind of want to be at home, so that's an East Coast trip, and that's tough.
Okay, there's a home stretch in which Utah's going to have to take care of business. Five consecutive home games. Portland, Sacramento, Washington, OKC, Indiana. Got to win all five of those games.
And they should.
They should. Because then after that, you play 6 of 7 on the road. At Lakers, at Houston. Home against Minnesota, at Sacramento, at Phoenix. I don't think that's an easy stretch either.
No, especially when you're playing, you know, teams back-to-back like that. You're probably not going to win both, so you probably split. And the Lakers will be fully healthy by then, you expect, so that's tough. And then Phoenix is very good.
Phoenix is a good team. Then you have a five-game home stretch in May. Toronto, San Antonio, Denver, Houston. You get four playoff teams, four consecutive games.
That's I like playing tougher teams down the stretch because you don't gain anything by playing those lesser teams. So closing things out, that's very nice for the Jazz. That will prime you for the playoffs.
And then at Golden State, home against Portland, at OKC, at Sacramento, that's how they end. There is a stretch where they're going to play Dallas and Phoenix back-to-back. I mean, I'm just looking at it, and I haven't counted, but the majority of their games in March are on the road. They only have four home games, and that's compared to six road games. Then you look at that 6-road game and 7-game stretch. I think that's tough. Yeah, I was a little surprised at the difficulty of the schedule. Plus, not to mention, you get the Lakers twice in L.A. You don't get the Lakers at home again after tonight. And one of the positives for Utah, you know who is missing on the second half of this schedule? I've gone through this 3 or 4 times now. They don't play the Clippers again in the second half of the season.
Done with the Clippers. They already played 3 times. The Jazz beat them 2 out of 3.
Yeah, so they don't have to worry about the Clippers in the second half of the season. Denver, you get Denver, and I worry about the Denver games with this Jazz team. But importantly enough, you know where Utah does not have to go in the second half of the season? They do not have to go to they don't have to go to Denver. So
it's good. They're done with the Nuggets, so they get the Nuggets at home.
Yep.
It's tough. Yeah, every team's going to play, you know, a tough stretch coming here in the second half. A lot of games crammed into a short time period.
A lot. Yep. Regular season ends on May 16th, and then we'll dive into the playoffs. We are out of time for this edition of the show. Again, tonight, 7:50. David Locker, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. Tomorrow, we have a lot of high school basketball. We're going to have a best of Drive Time Sports show here on KOAL. We have the Carbon Boys at 11:10. We have the Carbon Girls at 4:10. Those are on our sister stations, KRPX 95.3 The Peak. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here, the Emory Girls will take on the Delta Rabbits. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio and, of course, CastleCountryRadio.com for up-to-date schedules on the 3A high school basketball tournament. East Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.